the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Before we start, we got to ask a question, though. I'm on the world's greatest podcast. Any repercussions from last week's phone jacket?
None. Zero.
You overreacted. It's a perfect example. You overreacted.
No, I didn't overreact. I just sent out an apology before we, you know. I got it out ahead of it. And to this point, no repercussions. In fact, a couple ha-has and away we went. So you were right. Great, Frank. But if that's the worst thing that happens to me, I think I'll be all right. Let's go that route. But no, you're right. Great prank.
All right, so we...
I'm not doing it to anybody, but great prank.
A week from today, depending on when people are listening to this, we're going to play college basketball. I say that to you, you say...
All time, good. I hope. I got a lot of thoughts on that, Seth. I say I hope. Because, you know, this doesn't look like it's going in the right direction, at least in terms of tests. But it feels like we are going to have college basketball. What do you say?
I think we will. I mean, look, we've played college football every single weekend for the last 7 weeks. Now, we've had delays. I keep on saying it's protocol plans and patience. That we're going to have to be patient. We're going to have games that are canceled. We're going to be at games ready to tip, and maybe they don't tip. Maybe an official gets the virus. But I think we're going to start a season. It's going to be a season like any other. Not like any other, but we're going to work through the roadblocks and the detours. Look, we've got a little bit of positive news. We've got two vaccines on the way. They're not going to solve college basketball, but they're going to solve a lot of other ills down the road. And we've got to deal with it. And the idea of moving the start of the season back to March, to me, makes no sense. The earlier, the better, so that you have more leeway. If we learn anything from the Pac-12, is that by starting later, they put themselves in a very small window.
Oh, Seth, let's talk about starting later. You know, I think we just saw the NCAA yesterday when they came out and said, we're going to have the Final Four. We're going to try to put it in my city, Indianapolis, in a bubble type of situation with games. You know, Indy doesn't mean Indy. Indy means, you know, probably IU playing down there, playing up at West Lafayette. I don't know, but the idea that they're going, the NCAA feels like there's going to be a March Madness. There's going to be, and everybody can say, well, they're greedy. Well, I mean, everybody's greedy. Everybody, you got to conduct business. You got to have business going. I mean, we've seen, you know, so many businesses close, and we've seen the mental health aspects of business closing. So I saw some kid on some team, you know, came up. Well, of course the NCAA is going to have the tournament. It's all about money. Well, a lot of things are about money.
Well, I'll tell you, the kid on the team says that it's all about giving you an opportunity. It's all about, you know, to me, like the biggest, you said mental health. If you shut down the season till March, these kids that have been on campus since July, that have actually been working towards something, all of a sudden you're going to shut them down. You're going to send them back into their communities where they don't have the same medical care. They don't have the same testing. Let me tell you something. It's a mental, emotional crisis.
I'm living it every day. I'm living it every day with a stepdaughter that is dying to go back to Harvard, dying to play their season, kind of lost without it. Now, you adjust, and you do, and you make the most of it. But, look, you said college basketball starting, and I said I hope. I'm going to South Dakota. All right, we're going to do a tournament there. I hope, because, you know, teams have been dropping out of different things. We saw Loyola of Chicago just do that. We got some teams on pause. So, you know, we're going to have a season. I agree. We're going to have a tournament, I hope. And I hope we start it when we say we're going to start it. I do. As to moving it back, look, everybody's got a suggestion. Everybody's got an idea. Rick Pitino's idea was that good for him, but I think a lot of people are wanting to start it now, and I think it's frankly going to start now.
All right, so we're going to have Roy Williams on the podcast in a second talking to ACC basketball. Let's talk ACC. When you think about the ACC, back in the day, you would think Duke and Carolina. Now you got to think Virginia, Florida State, Duke, and Carolina. So as you look at the league, let's look at those four. Who are you excited about?
You know what? I had a chance last year to do a couple Virginia games. And Virginia had all the names gone, right? You know, Ty Jerome, gone. Hunter, gone. Guy, gone. But I really like a couple of guys. I like Jay Huff. Like, Jay Huff, to me, is in my – as I look around the country and I think of big guys, you know, Luka Garza, Trace Jackson Davis, I'm curious, what did Jay Huff do during this summer? Because if he got bigger and stronger, he has every skill that you want. Wallen Tensey made a shot to beat North Carolina in North Carolina. That tells me something about him. These are new names coming up at Virginia. We work with Taylor, and we got, you know, previews, and Virginia is the preseason favorite. That's fine. But I'm anxious to see, is this a next-level Virginia team with a bunch of new guys? North Carolina, Garrison Brooks is the guy. Seth, swear to God, this is so different in college basketball. You'll know this, but fans of college basketball can't name another guy on North Carolina. I mean, you know, because they're going to be so reliant on newcomers. Can't name another guy. Play tap. Well, that's not Michael Jordan. You know, that's not, you know, so it, that's different. You mentioned Florida State. Vassil, gone. But still, they're going to play the same. It when I was going through this last night, it fascinated me how these teams have caught up to North Carolina and Duke, at least for this year. Duke lost another three guys, right? They lose another three, bringing in another group of freshmen. But it's not Zion. It's not. And in Louisville, one of the best players in the country, I think, this year. I mentioned Jay Huff. I'm going to mention David Johnson. I love David Johnson. I think David Johnson is a killer late. I think he's going to be the next guy that makes shots late. But I'm anxious to see Virginia. I think Virginia is the class of this league. I do, Seth.
I'll hit on Louisville first. Louisville loses their four leading scorers and five of the last six. Malik Williams goes down. They have no front court right now. David Johnson's going to be terrific. I think Samuel Williamson is going to be terrific as a sophomore. Carla Jones, a transfer from Radford, will be good. I just don't know how they rebound the basketball. I mean, they lose the toughness in Sutton. They lose, obviously, tremendous, tremendous scoring ability in Nuara. And then they lose Williams. They lost Enoch last year. That's a concern. You talk about Virginia. Here's my thing on Virginia. I agree with you on Virginia. I think Huff is terrific. Sam Hauser comes in from Marquette. He's going to give him great versatility in the front court. How do you replace the Akite, Braxton Key, and their experience? That's a concern. The second concern is last year, as good as they were in terms of their record, all right, they turned it over 20% of their possessions. It's crazy. For a low-possession team, they're passing and decision-making. Now, they struggled shooting it until they won 11 of their last 12. They shot like 38% in their last 12. So they shot it a little bit better. Walden Tensai was a big part of that. I mean, he shot the ball really, really well. I like him. I'm interested to see the Hauser effect and how they replaced the Ikite because I thought he was underappreciated. Duke, Matthew Hurt came in with the big – go ahead.
Well, Diakite, you know, you go back to the shot he made 2 years ago to beat Purdue in the Elite Eight. I mean, Diakite. But I'll say this, Seth. I thought Braxton Key, I'm not going to say underachiever. I thought he came in with more hype. I thought Diakite, in fact, in one of the games that I did, Bennett took him out because he was sulking. It was interesting watching that team last year without the leadership of the three guys, as I mentioned, Jerome and Hunter and Guy. They did start out bad. People were questioning. But what I like about them, and here's an interesting thing for coaches. Do you think 11 of 12 last year, we've been through a pandemic. A lot of times, momentum from the previous season carries over. Do you think, given what everybody has been through this summer, last spring, now this fall, do you think anything carries over other than, you know, hope you have a season?
I think it carries over when you have guys returning. I think it carries over when you have a calm leadership perspective, which Tony Bennett obviously brings a tremendous amount of. Like, I look at Florida State. I mean, I look at them. Yeah, they, you know, look, they're going to lose potentially two lottery picks, and, you know, which is amazing. Patrick Williams, their sixth man, and Devin Vassell. They got MJ Walker back. MJ Walker's got to be better this year. I mean, this is the year that he takes over. Scotty Barnes, the freshman at 6'9", is like a point forward. He's terrific. But they also returned six dudes that played double-figure minutes that you talk about. People really don't know Polite. They don't know these other guys that played the Wilkes. They don't know these guys that played quality minutes that helped them win, that understand we're going to defend, we're going to disrupt, we're going to block shots. You know, we're gonna just rebound the hell out of the ball on the offensive end. Like, I think Florida State is Florida State. They are who they are. They're like, I look at Florida State in a lot of ways like I look at North Carolina. North Carolina had a horrendous season last year. They turned the ball over. They couldn't shoot the ball. But North Carolina still ran a break and they still rebounded. So, like, you know, Florida State, that's who they are. Duke, I think, is the bigger question mark because you got Matthew Hurt. How good can he be? I think Jordan Goldwire actually is a big X factor for them because when he kind of reboots, he always has one senior, like the Quinn Cook factor, that kind of leads the team. And I know they got Jeremy Roach, and I understand they have Jalen Johnson. I know they have Stewart, who can make shots. I'm worried about him up front. Last year, they played through the post. They were a good offensive rebounding team. I don't know if they're going to be that team. So I think that's the big four. Let me ask you of the second group, Q State, Georgia Tech, Miami. We'll throw Louisville in that mix. Any of those teams excite you?
No. I think Louisville, maybe I've already touched on them. No, they really don't. Seth, when I look at the ACC top to bottom, I don't see a great league. We'll see on the top. You mentioned the teams that we're talking about, but Georgia Tech, you know, okay, likes it.
This is supposed to be the year. This is supposed to be the year for Georgia Tech.
Syracuse, you know, I watched Syracuse make an unbelievable run against Virginia, but I just don't, Seth, when I look out there, I do this. I think of Syracuse, I think of all the players they've had, right? All the pros, you know, I don't see one. Like, I don't see one. I don't even see a Tyler Lydon. You know what I mean? I think Buddy Boeheim's terrific. I think Buddy Boeheim is, you want him on any team that you have. You want Buddy Boeheim on your team. But, Seth, I don't see Notre Dame. Notre Dame loses Mooney. You know,
how did they rebound the ball?
Yeah, but he scored it. He rebounded. You know, Pfluger's gone after 100 years. What's Pittsburgh doing? Pittsburgh's picked 13th. There isn't anybody there. I don't see a very good league, Seth. In fact, I'll tell you this. It's possible, even at the top, this may be the worst the ACC's been in our lifetime. Now, if you let's be honest, you're talking about a different era of basketball, fine. But is there in this league one guy that you say, man, that's top 10 draft choice, top 20 draft choice?
Scotty Barnes is going to be a lottery pick. I mean, Scotty Barnes is going to be a lottery
pick. I'll give you that.
There's no doubt about it. Garrison Brooks will be at the end of the first round. Probably. Who knows what's going to happen with, you know, Caleb Love and those guys.
We've seen teams in this league.
I played against them.
I know. That's what I'm saying. So when you...
That's why I'm talking to you.
When you look top to bottom, Seth, I don't know. You tell me. Well, you know.
Here's the thing. That second tier, I think NC State has a chance. I think they got Funderburk back, which I think he has a chance to give him an inside scoring. I think they get Daniel back, the kid from... Forget about, you know, how good the league is. I think they have a little legitimate chance. You know, DJ Funderburk, Devin Daniels, Jericho Cole, Manny Bates. They got four guys that are pretty damn good. I think Georgia Tech has a chance. I think to be, look, Georgia Tech hasn't been in the NCAA tournament in a long time. I mean, here's my thing with Georgia Tech and everyone. They're like the sexy pick. I mean, because they got Jose Alvarado and they got Michael DeVoe, and they've got Moses Wright, who had an incredible, incredible season last year, one of the most improved players I've ever seen. They shot horrifically from the three-point line, and then another team that turned the ball over. Now, if you have two terrific guards, and Michael DeVoe and Jose Alvarado, you got to run better offense. You got to be able to score. They've been a really good defense team, so I've got a chance. Miami's going to have a terrific backcourt. They lost to one kid to the ACL. But Chris Lykes is really good. Cameron Gusty is a very, very good experienced guard. And they get this kid, Earl Timberlake, a freshman from the Matha, who's a tough physical 6'6 guard. There are other good teams. I'll tell you my sock team, though. I'll tell you a team that I don't you're going to disagree. Yeah. I don't see Louisville being an NCAA tournament team this year. I just don't see them. They have no front court. They lose Malik Williams. They have no front court. I love Johnson. I think he's a really good player. And, Carla Jones, everyone says, is from Bradford. It's still different. I think Samuel Williamson has potential, but I don't see Louisville right now because of the injury with Malik Williams. Yes, but without him, I don't think they're an NCAA tournament team.
What does NCAA tournament team mean? Maybe everybody's in the tournament this year.
Nah, that's not happening. I know we're going to Indiana, and Indiana's got plenty of places. I think Syracuse, they might not have pros. How good is Griffin?
Not good enough. I mean, I hate to say that. He's a guy. He's not. One thing about Jim Boeheim, look, I'll always tell you this. Jim Boeheim went to the championship game with J.B. Reif-Schneider as his center way back in the day. I went and recruited J.B. Reif-Schneider. If you told me J.B. Reif-Schneider would be the center on a national championship finalist, I would say, so I'm a big believer in the James Dean of college basketball. I hope he gets better as he's battling COVID. But he wasn't a factor. He was the guy. Can I give you a bold prediction?
Yeah, nothing better than a bold prediction. Is that a bold prediction or a bold prediction?
I want to give you a big, fat, bald prediction. Size 8 head prediction. Raekwon Gray.
Oh, love my man.
First team all ACC possible player of the year.
He's the Draymond Green.
Yes.
Of the ACC.
Yes. Can I give you my I'm throwing a sock at?
Of course.
Seth, you know how much money is spent on coaches in the ACC? Per team, what do you think? It's average, $2
million? Per coach? Well, the bottom is not what, at least $2 million, over $2
million. I mean, you got Kay and those guys at the top, and you know.
Yeah, but Kay and those guys, Kay's making $8
million. That's what I'm saying. And you got other guys.
So I'd say it's over $3
million. $3 million per coach, basketball country, basketball league. I'm throwing a sock at the coaches on the bottom half of the ACC. Yeah. From 4 down. Earn your damn money. Get out there and recruit. That league is no good after about 4. I like the guys. I'm a fan of a lot of them, Seth. But I'm throwing a sock at them. You know how much money's on sidelines? You know how much money's in
I don't know. I never made that money when I was coaching in that league, so I can't relate.
Yes, you did.
No, yes, I didn't. Did.
Don't
I
lie
wish
to me.
I did.
I see. Hey, you got more money in books and behind you than I got in my entire house in terms of mortgage, so I don't want to hear it. Hey, I'm throwing a sock at the ACC. Look, Virginia, great. Duke, I don't know. North Carolina, I don't know. Florida State, going to be great. Other than that, I'm throwing a sock, Seth.
I'm going to say they're going to end up with 7 teams in the NCAA tournament. Because
as you know, and I know, when I was at Bowling Green, they always screw those teams. So, of course, somebody makes a phone call, and Kay makes a phone call, says, hey, man, we need...
Why didn't anyone make a phone call for me?
No, they didn't like you. They didn't like you. Nobody liked you. I'm the only guy that likes you.
Exactly. Mutually. I think the other thing is, and it has changed in college basketball, is with the pandemic, with transfers being eligible immediately, with kids wanting to play at a higher level. And I hate to say it, we're going to see the quote-unquote mid-major programs almost become extinct.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. I mean, if you can – one-time transfer, if you have an opportunity to play at a higher level, you're going to see guys say, you know what? I can play in the ACC. I had a great year at this level. It was a great experience. Boom. I'm moving on. And now the thing is, it's a one-time transfer exception. So those coaches that take these guys at the higher level, this is really important. You better do your homework. Because if you take a guy that just had a good freshman year from the Big South, and then he's not what you thought he was, you're stuck with him for 3 years.
Well, we're going to talk to Roy Williams, and Roy Williams just did that. Roy Williams, I don't know if he'll – be totally honest on this, but I'm not so sure he's all shot in the backside with taking grad transfers. He didn't have a great experience with it. And let me say something else since we're talking about Roy. Man, oh, man, I was stunned last year, Seth. I'm going to throw a sock at the media. Give me an give me an I mean, all Roy said was this isn't, you know, maybe my least skilled team. And all these little goofs on Tobacco Road and everywhere crush Roy Williams. He's disrespecting players. No, he's just being honest about his team. Man, last year, Roy got crushed for that. I mean, what, you can't say nothing about players? Everybody's great? Everybody's fantastic? Oh, my God, I got the greatest team ever, even though we're 1-20? Oh, these kids are fantastic. Oh, geez. No. Media loses that. Can you believe Roy Williams said that? Yeah, I can, because I sat there and watched their team. Well, he shouldn't.
Well, he didn't say anything to them. Here's my whole thing when you talk about your players. When you talk to your team, you tell your guys, I'm not – whatever I say to you, I can say to the media. Like it's truth serum, man. Like, you know, to me, it's real simple. You know, I call it straight talk. We're going to sit down, and it might be, you know, we're not the most talented team in the country, so we got to do this, 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 and this.
Right.
All right? And so, like, as long as, to me, your guys understand, hey, here's the deal. What I say to you, I can say to them. That's just the way it is. And you know teams are good and bought in when they start to sound like their coaches in a post-game press conference. And this is where everything gets turned around, and I'm not going to get into it, but even the Greg Marshall stuff. Context is important. Context is important in everything. Context is important when you're talking about a game in the studio and it's a wrap. What happened, when it happened, why it happened in relation to the game. Context is important. So, like, people don't understand. You got to, what is being said in its context is, you know what? We're used to having 4 lottery picks. We're used to having 3 first-round drafts. You know, this team right now, we don't have that. But we're going to continue to coach them. We're going to continue to play hard. We're going to try to put them in positions to be successful. And that's really kind of what Roy has said in all those interviews, except people take what they want to take out of the conversation and isolate it and then create a story. That's my opinion.
I agree. I agree with that. And frankly, Roy Williams said nothing wrong last year. Roy Williams, if he says it again, in my opinion, Roy Williams has earned the right. But when you look at a team, the one thing that I've always said about a team is the word buy-in. And the buy-in is with each other. And that's hard in basketball because it's such a statistic-driven sport. Buy-in is with the coaching staff. And I'm not just talking about the head coach. Buy-in is with assistant coaches. You know, one of the things that I always thought you had to do as a coach is you had to prove every day that you were prepared, that you were enthusiastic, and that you were ready to help somebody get better. And you couldn't take a day off. And sometimes when you do that as a coach, and I think most coaches feel that way, I think sometimes when you do that as a coach, your expectations are that as a player. And there are very few players. In fact, I can almost name, Calbert Chaney was one, DeMar Moore, a kid at Bowling Green, was two. And there weren't a whole lot where I said, you know what, I don't think that guy ever came to practice and didn't give everything that he had. Coaches give everything they have every day. And sometimes when you do that, you're so locked into what it is that you're doing that I'm not even going to say you slip up with the media. You just talk straight with the media, and next thing you know, it becomes a problem. But to me, you know, I would bet my life, you know, and I don't know very many players that played for Coach Williams, but I would bet my life in talking to him, they would say, oh, man, hey, man, there wasn't a day he didn't bring it, you know. Whether it was practice schedule preparation, whether it was intensity, whether it was enthusiasm, whether it was teaching. You know, sometimes it's anger. You know, sometimes you're mad at your team. But, and when you're in that bubble, man, sometimes you just don't say the exact right thing because your level of thinking is different than some little blogger boy sitting there with a pen and paper. He doesn't understand what the hell you're saying. He don't understand a damn thing you're saying.
That would have been a great opening rant, I'm just saying. I mean, that would have been not as good as the other opening rants, but that was, you know, it was top five. It was top five. There's no doubt. All right, so, hey, my player of the year, all right, I'm going to go with Garrison Brooks. I think my rookie of the year, I'm going to go with Scotty Barnes. My sleeper team of the year, I'm going with NC State. And my bold prediction is I think that 8 teams will get in the NCAA tournament. Blah.
Look, I'm with you. I'm with you on probably 8 teams because, frankly, you know.
You have to put someone in the tournament?
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't put me in. They had to, but they never put me in there for 4 straight years. It always goes back to me. I think Coach Williams is on. Is that correct, Taylor?
That's correct.
What up,
Coach?
Boss?
I knew when he said that you were on because I knew. I looked at my computer. It said 9 o'clock, and I said, "Coach is calling at 8:59, not 9 o'clock. No doubt about it."
Hey, Coach.
You Williams. Got it, Seth.
Coach.
How we doing, guys?
Good. Hey, Coach. When Seth was coaching in the ACC.
Oh no! Here he goes.
You know. I was at Bowling Green, so I knew y'all were going to screw the little guy to get teams in the tournament. Why when you and Kay, the most powerful men in basketball, were making your phone calls clandestinely to the tournament committee, like, you know, on that Sunday afternoon when guys, why didn't you get Seth in? Why'd you guys screw Seth Greenberg 4 straight years out of the ACC? Was he not in your little group?
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you know Seth?
Yes, answered. You why, just why answered would you the not question.
Why would you not shaft him?
Question answered. Do you know that? Forward answer. Done.
Coach, how do you feel, first of all? Now that I've got
good
sense.
Yeah, it's feeling good right now. And I'd like to have another 10 practices before we get started, but that crap ain't happening, so you got to go, boys.
Coach, when you see, like, Coach Bayon go down with the virus, what was the first thing that went through your mind?
That it has a chance to get everybody, Seth. I mean, we just initially we did such a poor job of getting this thing getting us in a better position to handle this thing, and now it is just running, spreading like wildfire. And you know, I wear a mask the entire time during practice, the entire time. You know, I was in a meeting where coaches were complaining about thinking about wearing a mask during the game. I'm going to wear a mask during the game. I wear a mask when I go see my grandchildren because I'm scared to death about the thing.
Coach, let's talk about that. How difficult or not difficult is it to communicate wearing a mask?
It's a little difficult, but as you guys know, I've got a big mouth and I can yell a lot. So you just got to elevate. You just got to, you know, throw it out there a little bit more. But I think the positives of it are so much better than the negatives are. And you know, I would say no more than, gosh, most times not at all. But every now and then in practice, I'll pull it out just a little bit and finish something and pull it back up above my nose. But I really do. I keep it on the entire time. And I think it's a little more difficult. But, hey, you know, I can remember when I was a high school coach when they said coaches had to stay seated. You know, you couldn't get up. And that was difficult to coach. This crap we're going through right now is nothing compared to that.
Coach, last season obviously was an aberration for what you guys go through. But, like, just what did you learn? Now you know how the rest of us felt, by the way.
I didn't Dan, like it. I know that.
I was going to say Dan especially, what did you learn about just yourself, your team that could maybe last year? You always say you want to look back and learn from something that's helping you with this year's team because third year in a row you got a freshman point guard problem.
Yeah, you know, I think the first thing that comes to mind is that why did it happen? And yes, we had. Most games of scholarship players that ever lost from North Carolina with injuries is like 48. We lost 98. Wow. Yes, that's a problem. But Roy Williams didn't do as good a job either. And yes, players didn't do as good a job of trying to do what we asked them to do. So first of all, you look back and say, why did it happen? It wasn't one simple thing that you can change. Cole Anthony was healthy for 9 games. He played more than 9, but he was only truly healthy for 9 games the whole year. But it wasn't just that. It was those other things as well. So what can I control is I can control Roy Williams doing a better job, and I can control demanding that my team do a better job than we did. And, yes, I brought it up a great deal because there's four guys, Leaky Black, Andrew Playtech, Garrison Brooks, and Armando Bacot. They were involved in that. And so they cannot do the same things this year that they did last year. And so that's number one. And number two is that we are more demanding in everything we're doing, whether it's on the court, off the court, and we're asking them to give more. And it's different times right now. I mean, my gosh, we have a couple of our guys that come down to the Smith Center in the morning, like at 10 o'clock for the class, because doing their own classes online. We set up this huge room for them to do their online classes in, and we make them come down every day. So we have some guys that get there 9 o'clock in the morning and don't leave until 7 o'clock at night. And so I think we're getting a little more of that devotion and focus this year than we had last year too.
Coach, when you say you didn't do a good job, how do you define that?
I would say, Danny, two things. One is that I would every day wait until 11 o'clock to see who was going to be available for practice. So then you try to change things. But I think I got away from our core, our values, not only on the court, but on the court, off the court as well. But you got to guard somebody, and you got to stop them from getting second shots. And you got to take care of the basketball and make the easy play, because the game is not that hard. You get the ball and I get the ball. You get the ball and I get the ball. The only way to break that down is for me to get more rebounds and not allow you to have those offensive rebounds. And then the quality of my shot compared to the quality of your shot. And then the third one is we've got to get a shot. And I think that we kept trying to spend time trying to cover things up, that we got away from those three things that I always talk about: rebounding, the quality of the shot, and getting a shot. And I think we got away from that and tried to come up with all this trick bullshit, and it didn't work.
Oh, right. I mean, and, you know, people discount injury. People always say, like, I'll tell you point blank, I lost my career to injury. Hell, I lost my two best players 7 of my 10 years, my 3 best 5 of my 10 years as a head coach. So I don't, you know, and I remember early talking to my son. Y'all played Ohio State, and he's like, Dan, this big court kid is really good. Now he gets injured. Talk about your front line, if you don't mind, with Brooks and Bacot.
Well, last year, that's all we had. You know, our third big guy was 6'6", Justin Pierce. And so, because Sterling Manley, who played a great deal for us as a freshman and then got hurt and only played a little bit as a sophomore last year, played none. And, I mean, he's 6'11 and long. And, I mean, he had three, his freshman year, had three double-figure scoring games, one double-double game. So we went down to Justin Pierce as our third big guy at 6'6". So they tried, you know, Armando against Oregon looked like a first round draft choice, and against Wofford he's 2 for 14. So his focus as a freshman was just getting a shot up there instead of focusing on making the daggum thing. But Garrison made tremendous strides. Well, now Garrison, I think, ended up thinking second team all ACC, was just did a really nice job for us, and was our defensive player of the year for our team. Well, this year, we've got those two guys, and Armando has made dramatic strides. I mean, he's really come a long way since last year. Garrison's still been steady, but we also have Walker Kessler at 7 feet and Dayron Sharp at like 6'10", and they are gifted. And so those guys give us something every day in practice to make Armando and Garrison say, hey, if you want to stay in front of me, you better bring your A game every day at practice. Walker Kessler is the first player I ever coached who is 7 feet without shoes on. And he has long arms. And Dayron Sharp, he really does. He sees the shot and he thinks every shot it's passing it to him. So he goes and gets the sucker.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. You've got the deepest front court college basketball. We had Walter with us at that Adidas All-American camp. Not only is he skilled and plays hard and 7 foot with long arms, he just wants to please, which to me was, I mean, he's impressive. But, Coach, try to think of your teams. I mean, we played 8 years. We also played when you were at Kansas. The first thing I said, you know, get back. You know, we got to contain the break. We got to keep the ball in front, outnumber the basketball, set our defense. Third point guard in 3 years, how good is Caleb Love and how has he picked up the pace? Because I I've been in enough Euro practices since I've been out. Like, if dudes ain't running, they're going to hear from old Roy.
Well, I want the pace to be even better, and I think all four of those big guys have understood now that they have to run. You know, we did have Kobe White, freshman point guard, leaves and go to the NBA. Cole Anthony, freshman point guard, leaves and go to the NBA. Kobe, he felt great about because we had a great run, and you know, he's not on a single mock draft in the fall, and in the spring or summer, whenever you want to call it, he's the sixth player taken, and so he came a long way, and he just did a great job. We had Cole, and who, as I said, was suspended all year, but he's highly thought of and struggled because of the injuries. But when he was healthy, the game against Notre Dame, the game at Syracuse, those are as good games as I've ever had a point guard play, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. But he's gone now as well. And so what Caleb and RJ, they're spending most of the time at the point, and both of those kids are going to be really, really good players. And we had a scrimmage yesterday. The first one we've had, we found two officials in the entire United States that had tested as much as we wanted them to be tested. And so we brought those guys in, and they didn't call any more fouls than my assistant coaches did. So I was mad at them when they left. But Caleb and RJ really do give us two guys that can play that point. And we have the security blanket of Icky Black, who can play back there, and KJ, who can play back there. I mean, we started a kid last year, Jeremiah Francis, who had to at one point when we played him against Virginia at Virginia. It was the first basketball game he had played in 1,000 days because he missed his entire junior year and senior year of high school with injuries and missed the first part of our year. He hadn't played a basketball game in 1,000 days. 2 games later, we started him at the point because Cole was out. So these guys, I'm knocking on wood now, so I'm hitting myself in the head. That means that we've got to get lucky and keep those guys healthy.
Yeah, I tell you what, man. People, again, say whatever you want, but health is important. Coach, you mentioned testing. Like, can you walk people through what testing at North Carolina means, the frequency, that kind of thing?
Yeah, and we continue changing every week. We get do more and more. We're up to 3 times a week right now, and I think we're going to get even more often than that. I can't say it properly. We're getting that chip, a connection, I think is the way that's close to what it is. But we can put a chip in our jersey, and at the end of practice, it gives us a readout of how many players and how long they really had close contact with De'Ron Sharp. And so we're trying to do that to help us in the contact tracing if something does come out. But I think that we're going to get close to, if not there, of testing every single day. I mean, hey, guys, the NCAA is moving the tournament to Indianapolis to do it all in one site. You think they don't need the NCAA? If we don't have the NCAA men's basketball tournament this year, the NCAA is nothing like what we've known in the past. They've got to have that money, or we can't even conduct the other sports teams here on our campus. We can't even conduct national championships for them. So we're going to do everything we can. We're spending a ton of money, and we're losing money. But if we don't have basketball and don't have that NCAA basketball tournament, college sports, as we've seen for the last several, many, many years, is going to change dramatically. So, you know, when you're talking about bringing all those teams to Indianapolis and playing there, you don't have travel, you don't have to go flying on airplanes, you don't do all this, you can have your little long bubble like the NBA did. This is some serious junk that we're talking about.
Coach, what have you done with schedule? I talked to a bunch of guys and they said it's the hardest thing they've ever done. I mean, we are a week away from the start. And I talked to 2 guys yesterday, said, I think we got a schedule. I'm not sure we have a schedule. Like, how hard has that been? And, like, I know you've always liked to play a certain number of in-state schools just to help them with their budgets. Yeah. You've taken your team on the road to help people open up arenas. How different has that been?
It really has been different, and it's been not been as difficult for us. We had to cancel 4 games that we really wanted to play, and some of those, as you're talking about, I was going to take my team to Monmouth because King Rice is the coach there for 10 years. I was taking the team up there to help out King, and I do like to go play and on the way, on the road, big schools, little schools, it makes no difference, just because I think college basketball is a coaching fraternity and we should help each other out. But we lost those games, and now I'm sitting here, and okay, if we didn't have the Maui invitation, which is in freaking Asheville, North Carolina now, and everybody thinks that I got it up there. I did not make one phone call, had nothing to do with it at all. When they told me, when Dave Odom says Asheville, North Carolina is one of our sites, I thought he was kidding me. I thought he was trying to find, I had no idea what the crap he was talking about. But since we're in that, what we had to do is we had to get rid of some games. It may have been better for our team if we didn't have that, and we could have had some of those other games to give our teams different experiences. But, you know, we got 20 ACC games. We're playing Ohio State in the CBS Classic. We're going, hey, Seth, how about this? We're picked fourth or fifth in our league. We weren't even supposed to be in the ACC Big Ten because we finished last, L-A-S-T, freaking last, last year in the league. And so they're sending our butts to play Iowa at Iowa in the ACC Big Ten challenge. I can imagine what you would have had to say if you were still in the ACC. But scheduling for other people is much more difficult than it was us. We just had – I had to call King Rice and say, King, we just cannot come. And that's not a comfortable phone call to make. And we had UNC Wilmington that we were bringing up here to help their pro. So there were some things there that made it difficult. But I talked to a coach last week that still was trying to get two games.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So when do you guys tip off? Are you tipping off the 25th?
Yeah, next Wednesday night, College of Charleston. We play them on Wednesday. And then we leave Saturday to go up to Asheville to get in our little bubble before the tournament up there in Asheville. We open up with UNLV and hopefully all eight teams from Texas to Stanford to Alabama. Hopefully everybody won't have any problems getting there.
Hey, Coach, what are your thoughts? You know, the NCAA talked about moving it to Indianapolis. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't really care. You know, I've always said I'd rather go play in warmer weather at that time of year. But, hey, I realized last year what it was like, again, without being in that tournament. And people could say, well, we didn't have a tournament. But Roy Williams knows deep down we were not going. And so my goal this year is just to play well enough to see if we can get in the sucker. And, you know, I don't care. I mean, to me, I used to go watch the Indiana High School tournament and watched high school tournaments around the country. But the old Indiana high school tournament I thought was sensational, and maybe that's because I wasn't coaching in it. But for us in these times, there's never been, and you guys were with me, you're not even one of as old as I am, but this has been the most difficult time in our country ever. We've had a political mess in the White House. We've had the pandemic. We've had racial inequality. We've had mistrust and more division in our country than I have ever seen. And I was in school in the Vietnam War when the protests were going on and the dissatisfaction with that. But that was nothing like what we have right now. So I think if we can pull this off and have an NCAA tournament, whether it's all in Indianapolis or not, let's have a big celebration of it. And I'm hopeful that we can have that celebration, that we were able to get it done.
Coach, you mentioned last one, you mentioned the social inequality and the racial inequality. How have you addressed that with your team? You know, has that been something that, you know, you get the guys back on campus, they've been away, you know, probably came back sometime in July. Everything was going on in our society. It's right in front of you. How were those conversations and have those conversations continued to try to move that conversation forward to give everyone a better understanding of situations?
Excuse me. We did a lot of things. Even before we came back, we had a Zoom call with the entire team every Sunday night, sometimes even with the parents, and brought them back. And we knew what was going on. They knew what was going on. So we tried to address it straightforward. I mean, we talked to them about it, about my thoughts about it. Then I would say to them, what are your thoughts? And we made every team member say something about what was going on. We made every team member say something about what they wanted us to do, you know, and we talked about those things consistently. I mean, I was fortunate enough, I was here in Chapel Hill as a student in the 60s, late 60s, when Howard Lee was our mayor. He was the first African American mayor of a major Southern city in the history. And so we brought him in to talk to the team about what it was like at that time. We would always talk, and we brought our guys in, got everybody to register to vote. We took them in the vans to get everybody to vote. Our entire team voted, but just talking about those things, but hearing it from their viewpoint. I mean, the three of us could talk for 800 years and never take a breath, but every now and then we got to let the kids talk as well. And that was my focus, trying to get them to tell me what they were thinking and what they wanted to do. And I told them, I'm not of your generation, and I'm white. I'm not African-American when we're talking about those issues. Tell me what you're thinking. And then with Steve Robinson, Sean May, and Kendall, and Hubert Davis working with us, we're, you know, different generations there, going all the way down to, heck, Kendall played for me in 2012. So we've got different generations around and talk about those things.
That's good stuff. Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time and, you know, stay healthy. That's the most important thing. Hope your family is well. Wanda's doing well. And, you know, it's going to be a different season. I say the three P's, plan, protocol, and patience. And we've gotten to this point where we're going to play a game. And hopefully we know there's going to be some roadblocks and detours, but wish you the best for the season. And we really do appreciate you. And by the way, Dockage doesn't understand. You were actually one of my great supporters in the league, as opposed to some other people that were, you know, didn't want to see the old Hokies in the NCAA tournament. But Dockage is a bitter man. Coach, Dockage is a bitter man. He's a miserable guy, but you won't recognize him because he shaved his head and he looks more like me now than he's ever looked like me.
Well, he told me one day he wanted to look like you, so that doesn't surprise me. Go ahead, Danny.
Coach, I want to look like a human penis, so I wanted to look like
all of a sudden the show went in the tanks. Hey, one guy told me one time, said, Roy, you've got more patience than anybody I've ever known. And I looked at him and I said, you really believe that? He said, yeah, because God gave everybody the same amount of patience, and you've never used any of yours, so you still got it. So I worry about that right there. But the other thing is, you guys, you know, I love both of you. I enjoy both of you. And I'm an easy podcast guy for you, because both of you have eaten your entire breakfast because you asked me a 5-second question and I give you a 5-minute answer.
Oh, man, we love you, Coach. Thanks for the time.
All right, stay safe, guys. Be good. Come see us when you get a chance.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's terrific, man. And, you know, I should have realized. I thought they were getting better at the end, but then they lost some and finished last. I mean, my gosh, what, you know. If you
That's almost like Tiger Woods making a 10. I always wanted to feel like Tiger Woods. I've made a 10 too. You know what I mean?
Seth, I will say this about Roy Williams, and I didn't do it as a head coach, but as between assistant and head coaches, in my opinion, he's the best I ever went up against. We could not beat him at Indiana. We could not beat him, and I never coached against him as a head coach, but we beat him one time. I just thought his teams, man, they tough. And you mentioned the point guard. You know, he took guys that, he had a kid named Jordan, last name Jordan, Adonis Jordan, one of his first.
Adonis Jordan. Yeah, he's a California kid, Reseda High School, Cleveland High School.
Yeah, and then he had Jacque Vaughn. And, you know, but you play point guard for him, you better run, and you better run fast, and you better make good decisions. But, that's terrific. Good stuff.
All right, I'll tell you who else we're going to have. We're going to have the great Eric Musselman come join us shortly to talk the Razorbacks year two. He's like a mad scientist, quite honestly. He has the ability to take guys from all these different transfers and freshmen and put them together, shake them up, and create a cohesive team. And I think a lot of that has to do with his CBA background, his NBA background. Obviously, his dad was a terrific coach. And he's got the greatest collection of masks, because every single day he posts on Twitter wearing some other team, whether it's an NFL team, whether it's an NBA team, whether who knows, with a different logo we're talking about, and then uses that to his Twitter account. Does a great job of giving kind of coaching messages. But when you think SEC basketball this year, D-squared, what do you think?
Seth, I'm always going to say Kentucky, but I think Tennessee's got it going on. You know, one of the great moves, and I'm sure Rick Barnes did not know this when he left Texas. You know, you're always disappointed. Your ego's hurt when you don't leave of your own volition. But what a great thing for Rick Barnes to be able to move to Texas, John, or Tennessee, Seth. And I think that when you look across the SEC, John Fulkerson and that crew at Tennessee, I'm never going to pick anybody over Kentucky. A lot of publications have Tennessee over Kentucky. I'm never going to pick them over Kentucky. And I'll also say this. I'm not as shot in the backside with Olivier Starr or Sarr as everybody else is. Now, I know John Calipari makes his teams really good, and I know players get really good. But I'm not shot in the backside with that guy. I'm just not. I'm not sure I'm even going to mention LSU because, frankly, they don't deserve to be.
I'm throwing a sock at LSU.
Throw a sock. Right, give it to him.
I'm throwing a sock. Give me. I throw a sock. What do you say?
Yeah. Why are you throwing a sock? Let the people know.
I'm throwing a sock because, look, they've got a good team. I mean, Trenton Wofford's obviously a physical rebounding player that's going to have a great sophomore year. Javonte Smart, who got a strong ass offer, and he's obviously still there, came back. He's a physical guard who can defend. You've got, obviously, Days. You've got Cameron Thomas, kid, who's a freshman, who's really, really a good player. So, I mean, they have good play. I just think that eventually this thing has got – it's been three years. There's got to be some closure. And one way or another, there's got to be closure. So, I mean, what's the sense of doing this investigation and doing all this research and having everything happen – and then the institution not having teeth to make a statement, if nothing else, you know what? You're going to continue to get paid until this investigation is over. But at this point, you're suspended. To me, it's a bad look. It's just a bad look. I look at the league. I think Tennessee is going to be really good. I agree with you. Obviously, you got to beat Kentucky, to take them over. But, Eve Ponds, Fulkerson, Josiah James, they've got a terrific recruiting class. The Johnson kid is a big physical athletic guard. They're going to defend. We know about Kentucky. I think Florida has a bounce back year. I think that Skylar Lewis, a year older, understands what it takes to be successful. I think Kenyatta Johnson is going to be one of the best players in the league. I think the kid Payne kid can block shots. I think Mike White is a terrific defensive coach. And I think that, even though they lost Nembhard, I think the Appleby kid is going to be really good for him. A transfer from Cleveland State, big physical guard who can score it and make plays, who's going to buy in. Noah Locke can really shoot it. The man kid will be better as a sophomore. I just think that they've also got a power forward transfer from Louisiana Tech, where Mike used to coach, that is going to be really good. I think Florida is my sleeper team in this league. I think Florida is a team that can get to the second weekend. I think Florida is a team that can actually compete with Tennessee and Kentucky at the top of the league.
Well, Scotty Lewis, Trey Mann, they've got to play. And you know what I kind of like? Scotty Lewis was a guy I think a lot of people projected as a one and done. I'm glad he didn't go. I mean, I'm glad that he took a swing. Here's what my sleeper team's Auburn. Now, I'm going to tell you why.
It's everyone.
That's why they're a sleeper, number one, not a favorite. When's the last time? When's the last time a Bruce Pearl team totally underachieved? When's the last time a Bruce Pearl team didn't overachieve? I look at all these teams in the middle and I say, all right, you know what? Kentucky, Tennessee, in theory, that school that starts with an L that shall not be named. But who's really, to me, Bruce Pearl, the way he goes about his business, they simply always win. And they always overachieve. If you'd have told me, and I still don't believe this, said I don't believe Isaac Okoro is a first-round draft choice. Then I just don't. I think he's okay. He had to go, right? Because when you get that kind of money thrown at you or a lottery pick. But I just think – and I don't even know anybody on Auburn's team. I'm just telling
Sharif you. Cooper, the freshman guard, is terrific for Bruce's right. system. He's explosive and quick. They
all
got
right.
the saying, they Bruce, got some kids back.
Of course. And Bruce Pearl, they lose Wiley. But to me, Bruce Pearl just overachieves, and you can pick him 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. You're going to see him 3 or 4. He does.
Yeah, well, here's the greatest thing Bruce Pearl does as a coach. One of the greatest things, he gets his guys to buy in. I mean, that's there's no doubt. But I'll tell you the other thing he does, and it's most underrated thing. You mentioned O'Curl. He is a great evaluator of players that can play for him.
Yes.
And I think that's the most important thing. You've got to understand who can play for you. And his guys understand the explosive, athletic, tough, fall in love with the game, allow yourself to be coached kind of guys. Now, I think they're good. I think Ole Miss is a sleeper deal. I think watch out for the Fighting Kermit Davises. I really believe. They got Devontae Shuler back. They got Buffen back. Romello White, the transfer from Arizona State, is a double-double up front. It gives him a legitimate front court player that can make plays. They've got a terrific transfer from Ryder, the Vaughn kid, who's going to help him on the wing. They got another guard on the perimeter from Cal State Bakersfield. I talked to Kermit the other day. He really likes his team. He likes their toughness. He likes their buy-in. He thinks he has more ways to score. And he thought that, he thinks that White is really going to have an impact on this team. I think the SEC's got some depth. I think, when we talk to Muss, I mean, I think Arkansas is going to be a good basketball team. I think that, this league, I think the biggest question mark in the league, and tell me who I have a concern about, and he's one of our, former coworkers, is I'm really worried about Georgia. I mean, they went the JUCO route now to replace players, but they couldn't win with Anthony Edwards. That's a concern. I mean, where do they go from here? Now, I think the bottom of the league, there are wins available. Mississippi State's down. They lost four starters and good players. They lost Witherspoon. They lost Perry. I mean, they lost Woodard. They lost potentially two pros. But, I wouldn't say throw a sock at them, but I have a concern for Georgia. Now, a team I'm a little high on is South Carolina. I think South Carolina's going to be better than people think.
I'm throwing a sock at LSU just because. That's it.
I like
it. My team, Seth, another sleeper team is Missouri, Konzo Martin. Konzo Martin lost Mark Smith and Jeremiah Tillman for a ton of games last year. They missed 21 games. He's got his first six guys back. I think Konzo Martin really connects with players. I think Konzo Martin, if you're smart enough to stay there for a couple years, but some of these guys have, I think you're going to see improvement in not only yourself, but in your buy-in to the team. Missouri, I've seen them picked as low as 10th in this league. I think Konzo Martin, again, to me, with the guys that are back, that are injured, they've returned their first six. I think you're talking about I'll make a bold prediction and say that Konzo Martin and Missouri finish in the top four in this league.
That is a bold prediction.
I like a little experience this year. I like, you mentioned the three P's all the time. Well, you got, patience doesn't come with children. Children are impatient. Adults have a little more patience. And when you've been in a system for a few years, you're more of an adult than a child. I agree with you on Georgia. Georgia throws the ball away, can't shoot, not really skilled. Texas A&M, I cannot believe this. I'm telling you, Seth, I did a Texas A&M two or three games in Orlando last year, and I'm telling you, I thought it was a Division II team other than the flag kick. Other than Savion Flag, I thought this team can't play. Well, this team goes 10-8 in the league, for crying out loud. Buzz Williams did a heck of a job. I'm going to see them early. Flag is back.
You have the first game on ESPN, 2 o'clock. I'm in the studio. Boom.
Yeah, and you know what? They're going to do that little religious walk that they do, whatever it is in their practices, where everybody holds hands and walks.
Then they join in?
No.
Don't join in.
No.
Social distancing.
No, that's I'll say. And then they take the team picture from up top, and everybody waves at the camera. It's glorious. It's a glorious practice. But for that group to finish 10-8, hey, look, either the SEC stunk or Buzz Williams did a hell of a coaching job, and I think the latter, not the former.
Yeah, he did. He did a heck of a job, and they were really good defense. They couldn't throw the ball in the ocean.
Oh.
They, They didn't take great care of the ball. Now they lose two guys. Josh Nebo, it's pretty good for him. I mean, he was just a tough, hard-nosed dude. Yeah. And Wendell Mitchell, but you talk about Savion Flagg. Savion Flagg is legit. I mean, but he's going to have to rely on Kevin Marfo to transfer from Quinnipiac, who's one of the best rebounders in the country, and he's going to have to rely on top of that on freshmen. And his system, and he brings guys together, they will be impacted by not having his guys on campus this summer and the pandemic probably as much as anyone because of the number of guys he's going to have to immerse in what they're doing.
Well, Nebo was good. The kid from Quinnipiac, I mean, he's all right, but I don't think he's going to come in and rebound in that league. Seth, we haven't talked about your beloved Kentucky Wildcats. You haven't broken them down. You haven't closed your eyes and gone into the crystal ball. Give it to me, baby.
This is going to be interesting. One returning player, Keon Brooks. I think Keon Brooks, when he gets healthy, he's had a little bit banged up in preseason. I think he had his moment where he can maybe, I'm not saying be P.J. Washington, understand he's running his own race. And that was the Florida game at the end of the season. At the end of the game, he knocked down two threes in that game. But at the end of the game, because he played well, because he bought in, because he did what Cal asked him to do, he went to him at the end of the game. And I think the light bulb went on. He said, you know what? If I buy in and play well, coach has confidence in me. And to do that, I've got to buy in. And I think that's what happened. So I think he's going to be fine. Look, their wing guys are terrific. EJ Boston is terrific. I mean, he's 6'7", 6'8", long arms, can put it on the ground, can make shots. Terrence Clark, not as advanced, but another wing guy with great size and length. I think the kid who transferred from Creighton is going to be, the men's kid is going to be huge. They got Devin Askew, the kid, the freshman guard from modern day. Was a big physical, kind of like the Harrison twins, a big physical guard, but doesn't really get downhill as much. The Mintz kid, he's a big-time shooter, which is going to open up the floor. Then they got Saar up front, and the Jackson kid, talking to Cal, he said, this guy's got a chance to be Marcus Camby. I mean, he's 6'11", the floor, block shots, has tremendous, tremendous instinct. And feel for the game. He's really, really excited. Isaiah Jackson, he thinks that, like he said to me, he goes, you're going to watch him one time, you can know he's going to be special. So you got big wings, which Cal likes. You've got Davion Mintz, an experienced point guard who is at Creighton, who understands spacing and shot making. I think Keon Brooks has to get healthy. Now, you're not as high on Olivia Saar. What are they asking him to do? I think he's got and this is what John said to me, and I thought it was interesting. He said, at first, he didn't understand the speed and the intensity we did things and the expectation to do things this way every single day. And now he's getting up to speed. Look, he has played in the ACC. He's been productive on a bad team in the ACC. He's shown he can rebound the ball in the ACC. He's finishing a little bit better. I think he'll be good in all this spread because Cal's going to almost all dribble drive and spread ball screen stuff, a lot of dribble handoff with a lot of different angled step up. At least that's what he's starting with right now. You never know. He's going to go back to circle one and two before it's long, right?
Of course.
And he's going to go to Vegas eventually too, the flat, the false motion to the flat ball screen. But I think they're going to have a good seven-man rotation, which that's when they're at their very best, is when he gets seven guys playing well together. And if Boston and Clark are as good as I think they are, and Mintz can be a steadying force, I think that they're going to win. But they're going to have to place a lot of shot making and a great on-ball defender in Higgins.
I'm glad to hear you talk about Keon Brooks because it was sloppy early. He had an A.
Oh, yeah.
Mildy, all that kind of stuff. But I'm going back to a kid that, and you and I have both seen this, when outside people start getting mouthy and stupid, many times that affects a kid, and ultimately the kid makes a bad decision, goes somewhere else, and next thing you know, he's drifting. Well, I like that Keon Brooks kind of squashed it, the dumbass AAU coach. I like that he squashed it. I like that he stayed with it, and I like the fact that he earned Cal's trust. because that's all that is. That's just a guy being trusted by his head coach when you play him at the end of a game when he really wasn't there. So good for him. And you expect him to have a pretty good year.
Yeah, I do. I mean, he's an interesting guy. I mean, he's long. He can make a shot. And what he did was, at the end, he made two threes and everyone got caught up. He had 10 points in that game. But he made two tough baskets at the end of that game. He made two baskets in traffic at the end of that game. He came up with a big rebound at the end of that game. And you know, there's certain things that all of a sudden, coach is picking on me. And then all of a sudden, aha, I see why coach is picking on me. And I saw an interview with him at their pro day. And he said the most important thing his role is with this team, besides obviously contributing on the court, is teaching the young players the method, Cal's method and his madness and how much he cares. He said it took him a while to understand Cal was challenging him every single day because he saw something special in him. And he said at first he fought it. And then all of a sudden he said, you know what? Why am I fighting it? The guy wants to see me be successful. And I think that maturity of saying that's my role now to the rest of this team is important. But you know who we have coming up to talk with us? We got the Muss bus, baby. We got the great Eric Musselman. Coach Muss. All I know is, hey, before we start, here's a certain thing. Bakich and I, we're not proud. I really believe there's got to be a Muss bus long sleeve dry fit somewhere, you know, that would fit Dockage and I, because I'd wear it with tremendous pride.
Well, we got to try to figure out somebody to print one. We don't have one right now, but there will be one in the mail very, very soon. We'll create one.
Triple X. I've become a porn star. Triple X, please. This pandemic has cost me hair and a little bit of waistline. Coach, how
I'm down 30 pounds. You got the 30 I lost, big boy.
I found yours. I found it.
Hey, Muss, before we ask a serious question, how many different masks from different teams that you have somehow become associated with or have gotten inspiration from, what's the number at? Because, I mean, you need another draw, and your Danielle's going to have to move one of her 14,000 outfits so she has enough room for your T-shirts and masks.
So right now, Mike Kaywood, our SID told me last night we were up to 79 masks, and they're still coming. It's been pretty funny because it started off with, you know, MLB teams and a few NBA teams and some NFL teams, and now minor league teams, they're just sending stuff. So it's been, I got a great collection, although the wife is not allowing anything into the house. It either gets mailed to my son, Matthew, at the University of San Diego, or my other son on staff, Michael, takes it. But I'm not allowed to bring anything home anymore. I'll shut that down.
Muss, I call you the mad scientist because of your background, obviously being the son of a coach and a great coach, by the way, and a guy that has coached at every single level. Your journey, obviously, success is a journey, not a destination. There have been roadblocks and detours. How do you get these different groups of guys and different personalities, guys that come from different programs in a pandemic with social unrest, to come together and be the best version of themselves?
Well, there's a lot wrapped up in that question, Coach, because, I mean, I think there's a lot of things. One, just with the things that are going on in society with the social injustice, I think that, you know, we have a little thing that we do before most practices where we go through some type of history. I'll go through, you know, what I've learned about it. I'll kind of research the subject, or if it's about a particular person, as much as I can, deliver a little bit of educational stuff, and then just kind of open up the floor to see if the players want to add anything or talk about anything. And some days there's really great, conversation, intense conversation, and other days, it's more just watching the video that we put together. But then I think when you try to just bring a team together, the hardest thing for me right now, during the pandemic with the mask, is the guys can't see you smile. That to me is, we can see them because they have no masks on, obviously, in practice. So we can get a feel for their body language and so on and so forth. But to me, it's been really, really hard because your eyes can only tell a person so much. And, you know, I just think body language and, you know, a smile goes a long way, especially if you have intense practices and you're trying to get the most out of your team. And then the other thing is just this mental grind. You know, nobody's played a game since March. And, you know, now the season obviously got pushed back from its normal rhythm and routine. And even though it might just be 2 weeks or whatever, it's a long time when you're in a training camp mode. And that's been the hardest thing, is just trying to keep guys mentally fresh as well as physically fresh coming into a season.
Hey, Coach, you added three grad transfers, and two of which I've seen a lot of. One, Justin Smith here at Indiana, then Jalen Tate, and then the kid from New Mexico. How important is it during these times with all that you're saying to have older kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think all coaches at all levels, what, you know, if you're coaching in high school and you have a senior laden team, you know, I think that helps you. If you're coaching in college and you have some guys that are either grad transfers or seniors, I think that helps you, especially on the road. I think it's a real benefit. It's no different in the NBA. Obviously, we've got veterans that have been in playoff situations. That helps once you get into a seven-game series. So those guys are really, really important to us. I think, you know, one of the things, especially because we have four incoming freshmen, is how you practice, how hard are you going? Because younger players will tend to look up to older players. And that's been something that we've continually stressed every day, is how you have to practice like a pro, meaning you come in, you get your shots up early. After practice, you go and take care of yourself in the training room. You stretch after practice. All of those things are, you know, really important that I think older players and veteran players are able to show a younger group of incoming players.
Mus, what's a typical day for your guys now? Like, what's a typical day for, you know, like, in relation to what a typical day would have been a year ago?
That's a great question, Coach. Like, we have guys shooting more than in the past on their own. And I think it's because, you know, we decided that no matter what, all of our players were going to be online classes, because even if in-person classes were offered, we did not want to take that risk. And so to try to form ourselves, you know, in a situation where we'd be as healthy as possible. So the guys will go into, you know, study hall. They'll actually, when they have classes or they're doing their online stuff, we don't have them do it in their apartments. We have them come in to the academic center, because we just think that helps them academically to not be, you know, doing class laying in bed. You know, or like my son, I mean, you know, I'll call him and he'll be on a FaceTime call with his class while he's out skateboarding. That's probably not the best way to learn. So our guys are, you know, it's a really different atmosphere in their daily routine. You know, but I also think there's some benefits if you can talk about it. I mean, nobody's comfortable living in during a pandemic, but I do think you've got to try to put as much positive spin as you can to your guys, and they have to have that same mentality.
I'm a little surprised you don't skateboard to practice. You know, I mean, being your background.
Coach,
I mean, come on, San Diego. I mean, I know you love that San Diego lifestyle.
I can't even skateboard down the end of my driveway anymore. Danielle put the end to that. I tried to teach my daughter how to skateboard. I fell down. She told me I needed elbow pads, knee pads, and a helmet. I signed up for 50 years. I never used a helmet or not when I'm skateboard. So she settled down and she usually shuts down most of my nonsense.
Yeah, you know what? Guys are, you say, look, I never wore a helmet. You know, maybe there is brain damage, but I don't know that there's brain damage. No. I mean, you know, golly. Hey, hey, Coach, when you look at this year's team, you know, you lost some players. I mentioned the grad transfer. On the court, your team, what do you think so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure we're a work in progress. We had a red and white scrimmage that was open to the student body. We had a great turnout, too. We had over 2,000 students who were spread out in Bud Walton. So it gave us an opportunity to try to evaluate with referees, you know, with the lights on. But we're a work in progress because, you know, we have the three grad transfers we mentioned. We have the four incoming freshmen. We have a couple returning players. And then we have two guys that sat out last year, J.D. Note, a combo guard from Jacksonville, who's a really good scorer, and then Connor Vanover at 7'3", who played as a transfer from Cal Berkeley. So we have all these different pockets of players that we're trying to mesh together. You know, I think we'll play hard. The one thing that you know, we had last year is we had two stars that we knew who was going to get the ball late game. We were going to go to Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe. Those guys both hopefully will get drafted on Wednesday. So for us, we're trying to figure out what happens when the game is on the line, or we're trying to figure out when the X and O is break down and we're late in shot clock, who can go freestyle and get our team a shot or get himself a shot. Because at the end of the day, I just believe that stars still win games, even at the collegiate level.
You mentioned Isaiah and Mason. What do you got? What do you hear? I mean, you know, two guys that Mason had, both of them had terrific years. Now, Isaiah didn't shoot it as well as I think. I think he's a world-class shooter. But what are you hearing about those guys in terms of draft?
Yeah, I mean, I think both those guys, you know, having talked to them, and Mason was just with us for a week and worked out early in the morning in our facility. I mean, I think that those guys both will probably get drafted, although, as we all know, the draft is just takes on wild twists and turns every single year. But, yes, Isaiah, an incredible shooter with great range and an underrated defender. He's a really, really good team defender and a really good on-ball defender. And then Mason Jones, you know, when you lead the country in free throws attempted, which is a stat that will correlate at the next level. And then you add in this three ball shooting. And I think he can play a lot of different positions. I mean, we used him a lot at the point forward. We put him in pick and rolls as a ball handler late in the season, early in the season. He was a pick and roll screen setter who picked and popped, and we iced him. So I think both those guys fit you know, an NBA style and can play at that level.
Coach, you heard the NCAA maybe moving to one spot. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that anything to get us to the finish line, anything, you know, to have a season, I'm all for. You know, I hope that these guys, meaning our players and the players across the country, can have as normal a college basketball season as they possibly can. I think the one good thing, if in fact we do have a bubble for the NCAA tournament, I think that our players all look up to the NBA. And if you look up what happened with the NBA and how those guys went about their business, for the most part, was incredible. To go into a bubble takes great dedication. And I think it's a great idea. I mean, whatever the higher-ups believe can get us and crown a national champion is what the sport needs.
Hey, Mus, what is it like to be the head coach at Arkansas and be the third most famous person in your family?
Well, you know, when we go to dinner, I mean, people come up to talk to Danielle and Mariah more than me, I can tell you that. but the great thing is, you know, we're so active on social media, and Danielle's kind of taken a turn here of late where she will make fun of me constantly on Twitter without doing it face-to-face. And so I had a conversation with her the other night at the dinner table and said, hey, maybe we should run, you know, some of this Twitter stuff by each other before it just goes public. And we're not having that.
Right.
Hey, last basketball question. It is funny, though. I have to admit, between your motivation and Danielle's shots at you, it makes an easy morning read. But last year, you played with great spacing, and you had the floor open, and you know, you guys played at a ridiculously fast pace. Is that your identity, or are you going to be, you know, like you would have done in the NBA, you're going to kind of tweak each and every year your identity?
Yeah, I mean, I love studying coaches, love studying the Patriots and Bill Belichick, and the way that we do game preps is, I think some coaches, like, they have their own defensive style and they stick to those regardless of what the opponent is. We like to change up and try to take away things that our opponent does, and we'll go from one scheme to another scheme as we're in season. I think the same thing with each year, when we start a team, it's like, the style and the identity that we play, how cosmetically we look, I think really depends on the players. And we talk about that every day. Yes, we'd like to run. Yes, we would like to play with good pace. Yes, we would like to shoot threes. But how quickly and how dedicated are you getting to those five spots on the floor? We studied the Milwaukee Bucks spread offense the entire pandemic. We implemented that. How it works out from a spacing standpoint, and guys being able to maybe read and react more than calling out set plays. We've added more concepts maybe than we have in the past to allow a little bit more offensive freedom. But yes, we'd like to play like we have in the past. But again, I think it really depends on, we got to take care of the basketball. The one thing that we've been really good at in the 5 years, the 4 years in Nevada, and even last year, was we want to get a shot on goal. We don't want any live ball turnovers. We'd rather take a bad shot than turn the ball over. And that's been a learning curve for a lot of our players.
That's great stuff right there. That's crazy. Well, who's your first game and when do you play?
Well, we're hoping to play on the 25th of November. That's the plan right now, Mississippi Valley State. And our guys cannot wait. We're a little over a week right now away. This is the most excited I've ever been, just because, it's been so long since we've been having an opportunity to compete against somebody else.
Moss, you're the best, man. Keep it going. It's fun. It's fun watching how, let's face it, you were a quote unquote a pro guy, and how you've embraced everything about building a program in a college town and college basketball, and then the success you've had. And good luck on Wednesday with your guys in the draft, and stay healthy, stay safe, take care of your family. And we look forward to seeing you guys play, man.
Now, Coach, thanks so much for having me on. You guys, love listening to both of you. Keep doing what you do for College Hoops. It's awesome.
Muscle's a great dude.
He is a great guy.
Danielle Musselman kills him on Twitter. It's hilarious. Yeah.
I like it. That's a sign of a good relationship.
Yeah, you need someone to, Coach Ross needs to be a little, go after you a little bit on Twitter, I think.
She's so in love with me that she just can't do it. Like, you can't bring herself to do anything but just, glorify me. Maybe.
Any statues in the house?
No, in fact, they said the other day, getting ready for the season, I got a thing from ESPN that says, hey, you got all this fancy stuff behind you. If you walked into our house, only one little area would you ever know that she or I coached anything or played anything. I got nothing. I mean, I got no, I guess I got stuff packed away, but I couldn't tell you where my NCAA championship, NCAA tournament championship ring is. I couldn't tell you where I think I got two Final Fours. I know you got Final Four, MAC championship. I can't tell you where any rings are. I got no idea. So my brother actually one time in college sold my car and didn't tell me. He sold my car to go on spring break and didn't tell me. I think my brother sold my rings at some point because I have no idea where they're at. No idea.
I'd say go find a good attorney, but isn't he an attorney or is that your sister?
He's an attorney. Yeah, he's got it all covered. Yeah. I took my car in as a junior. He was in law school. I went back to get it from this guy, Brenniger, and I'm like, hey, man, your brother came and got it. I go, oh, okay. So I go, hey, Tom, where's my car? He goes, oh, hell, I sold that 3 weeks ago. I went to spring break. I needed money. I sold your car. It was a piece of crap. I sold it $600. Went to spring break. There you go. That's my life right there.
Hey, what's the family motto?
Sack the hell up, man. Sack the hell up. Hey, last thing, Seth. I'm going to be on Feast Week. I'm going to be on South Dakota. Hopefully we get it going. But just so people know, I mean, it's going, and you're going to be in studio. I don't know if it's called Feast Week or whatever the hell it's going to be called, but we're rolling, right? I mean, that's the plan.
I don't have my full schedule, but I know the 25th, 26th, 27th, I'm going to be in the studio. I'm going to be there the 1st, the 2nd, the 3rd, and like the 6th. So college basketball's happening. Tomorrow later today, we have our college basketball. Usually it is a meeting on campus. It's going to be a virtual Zoom call. I've got a meeting later on today with all the Raps people, the Raps producers, kind of giving them a little quick refresher course on some of the teams and some of the players. So we're getting ready for hoop, and we're going to continue these previews. We're going to talk some under the radar teams and mid major teams and teams that are non power conference teams on Thursday, and then we'll cover the Big Ten, obviously, and the Pac-12 next week. So we're going to keep people locked in. Appreciate Coach Williams. Appreciate the Must Bus. Got you a little cotton. Hopefully, we'll get a nice Must Bus T-shirt or something. You know, because I mean, you know, let's face it, we don't get any gear. I was going to ask for a sweatshirt or something, because you know, to work out it. But I wasn't that greedy today.
Yeah, we don't get any gear. You didn't pay. All I can see on you is a hat that you didn't pay for, earbuds you didn't pay for, and a ESPN sweatshirt you didn't pay for. Stop it, Stosh.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.